Welcome. This is Dr. Nalini Chilko. Welcome to our live ground round call for the Foundations of Integrative Oncology. This call will last approximately 1 hour. We'll start with a clinical pearl, then I'll go over questions and bring a couple of research papers to your attention, and then go over a really fantastic case that we have for tonight. Please be mindful of patient privacy and ensure that any discussions or questions protect the privacy of your patients. Everyone is muted right now. If you want to ask a question, just hit *7 and that will unmute you and you can ask a question. And I will leave space in between talking about each section for people to ask questions. So let's get started. The first thing I want to talk about is apoptosis. Remember that apoptosis is one of the hallmarks of cancer, and this means that tumor cells are able to escape from programmed cell death or apoptosis. And the initiation of apoptosis really determines the fate of a cell. And so this is one of the strategies of cancer cells to survive. Their apoptotic switch gets turned off. And that is really part of the intelligence of the cell, recognizing itself as aberrant and self-destructing so that our body sort of calls out the unhealthy cells. Now, apoptosis is initiated by the hyperpolarization of the mitochondrial membrane. And so there are functional proteins that alter that and change the signaling. When the mitochondrial membrane is hyperpolarized, then the cast bases are released into the intracellular space, and then there is signaling for cell destruction. And so this is what gets stopped. So this is also part of how tumor cells can develop drug resistance. So this is a quality of almost all cancer cells. And so if we can alter this and turn apoptosis back on, this is one of the most powerful things we can do. Most drug companies are looking for things that do that. So one of the functional proteins in the mitochondrial membrane is called BCL2. And it's a mitochondrial membrane-bound protein, and it regulates apoptosis. And there's the BAX protein, and they're paired. So the BCL2 is it turns off apoptosis, and the BAX protein turns on apoptosis. So we want to suppress BCL2 and promote BAX. And so we will look at some lists of lots of phytochemicals and plants and botanicals that actually do that. And so you can see, and remember, I've provided a number of lists for you. List one has foods that have phytochemicals that promote normal apoptosis and inhibit the expression of BCL2. And so these are lots of the foods we recommend in an anti-cancer diet: garlic, parsley, celery, all the brassicas, turmeric and ginger and rosemary, oregano, all the berries, green tea. So understand that this is one of the reasons these foods fall into the category of being anti-cancer foods. And then there are individual phytochemicals that we want to think about, because we could potentially give those in pharmacologic high-dose amounts. And so those are things like apigenin, allicillin, the sulforaphanes, curcumin, chrysin, et cetera, resveratrol. So you can take a look at that list. And then the whole plant also. So there is a practice of using both the isolates, the phytochemicals in these powerful plants, and then using the whole plant too in respect of nature's design that we couldn't possibly know why it's all that way. And there are other factors than we get in plants if we use both the whole plant and an isolate. So curcuma longa, of course, is turmeric. Ginseng, rhabdosia, one of my favorite botanicals and cancer formulas, tumor control formulas, green tea, magnolia bark, andrographis, the Scutellaria bicalensis, Huang Qin, which I talk about often, Salvia miltureza, one of my favorite anti-tumor herbs. So you've got a nice list there. You'll see some of the mushrooms on there too, Ganoderma and Pleurotus and Enontis. Enontis is chaga mushroom, and Ganoderma is reishi mushroom that you're familiar with. So be mindful that these whole herbs also in significant doses in a formula of extracts, for example, I might mix some of those into a formula, will yield this anti-BCL2 signal. And then I've given you a list of things that are available as supplements, so things that are already made into capsules, and that would be a familiar list to you too, curcumin, EGCG, resveratrol, pterostilbene, hinokiol, quercetin, berberine, etc. And then I just want to talk about a handful of phytochemicals that I think we can really leverage that might not be in the foreground of your mind. So chrysin is a bioflavonoid, and so it's of plant origin, and it is not only turns off BCL2, but it's an aromatase inhibitor as well. So I use it for both reasons, and it increases the Bax to BCL2 ratio and activates the caspases, which lead to the induction of apoptosis. So does exactly what we want. Hinokiol, we've had a separate clinical rounds call with this as the clinical pearl, so you can go back and look at that. But this is one of the functions of hinokiol, which comes from Chinese magnolia bark. And I usually give somewhere between 500 and 2,000 milligrams. It's kind of hard on the stomach, so some people don't tolerate, but it's very powerful in triggering apoptosis. And so therefore, when you do that, it reduces proliferation and tumorigenesis because the cells can't replicate. They die instead. Indole-3-carbinol in the sulforaphane family, 500 to 2,000 milligrams a day, has multiple functions. It upregulates Bax, so it changes the mitochondrial polarization. It activates the caspases. It's also anti-inflammatory, anti-angiogenic, and it also inhibits histone deacetylase, meaning that the DNA remains protected. And there are some studies that show that it interferes with tamoxifen. I will just point that out, that there are some studies. I'm not sure this is true in humans. I think it's true in mice. And then all the cruciferous vegetables are a source of the indole-3-carbinol. And then one of my favorite herbs is Polygonatum odoratum. And there are other species that are in different parts of the planet, different continents of Polygonatum. But this is Solomon's seal or yuzu in Chinese medicine. And it's very powerful downregulator of BCL2 and an upregulator of Bax. And it also, in addition to influencing apoptosis, it influences glycolysis and energy production as well. So it influences mitochondrial function. And then Oldenlandia is one of my favorite herbs also. It's actually oleander, so it's toxic, but has anti-tumor activity for multiple reasons. It is a source of ursolic acid, which is a phytochemical that's very powerful in promoting apoptosis and cell cycle arrest and autophagy. So these are four of my favorite, most used of the phytochemicals. But you can see by the list that these are things that are in many, many pieces of our dietary recommendations and also in many of our treatment plans. So I will stop here. If anyone wants to ask about this, you can certainly do that. I'll just pause for a moment. Okay, that was all pretty straightforward, and I know you have the notes. So I'm going to go on and answer some questions, and then we'll look at a few studies, and then I'll do this great discussion of a pancreatic cancer case. So Bob Nesbitt asks, I'm trying to set up FullScript and I see Dr. Nalini favors Designs for Health. Any particular reason? So the big answer to that is there's just a handful of companies I think are super high quality and still maintain a high commitment to very pure raw materials, strictly assaying raw materials and the end products, and having a very controlled manufacturing process and storing the vitamins and supplements they make properly. And I have to say, I do have a bias because I know the founders of the company and I've known them since they started it. And so I like to support them. But I really, my top companies are Designs for Health, Integrative Therapeutics, Thorne, and some pure encapsulations products. So that's really why I have a bias. But the industry has changed over time, and I was in the supplement industry, and so I watch very carefully. I think that there are a lot of physicians and clinicians that don't know much about the supplement business, but I know quite a lot about it, and so I really vet the companies and keep current with them. There was another company that I recommended for years that I don't recommend anymore because it was sold, so those are the reasons that I use that. And then Bob also asked, he's been on my online store, and he saw a 5 Daily Essentials kit, and he couldn't find two of the products. Maybe our links are bad, but the calcium malate chelate and the magnesium malate chelate are very much available, and you can find them inside Fullscript. You can find them in the Designs for Health site. You can find them in Emerson and Natural Partners distributors. So it might be we have a bad link and we need to look into that. All right. So Bob asked the third question, the presence of heavy metals and how to deal with that in a cancer patient. So I follow the work of Walter Crinian and Joseph Pizzorno, who are naturopaths that have specialized in analyzing and treating toxic burden in patients for decades. I consider them both masterful. And I believe this year they're releasing a book for clinicians. Last year or earlier this year, I think they released a book for the general public on this topic. Also, Chris Shade is very knowledgeable about mercury assessment and toxicity. So those are the experts that I look to when I'm trying to keep updated, and I always look to see what they're doing. Now, certainly, having a body burden of heavy metals is going to compromise immunity, cause mitochondrial dysfunction. And so, you know, the heavy metals will take the place of normal metals, metals that should be there, you know, for example, in mitochondrial function and oxidative phosphorylation. And so things go haywire because of that. And certainly we have a compromised immunity and compromised mitochondrial function when we have heavy metals. But a lot of these patients aren't in any shape to go through an aggressive chelation, or we might discover that right as they're about to have surgery or start their chemotherapy. It depends when somebody comes into your office. So my big answer is you have to see if the patient is able to go through chelation, and that might be oral, that might be IV, but you could just put in some things like cilantro or cilantro oil or coriander, and you could put in some detox products like the Designs for Health Detox Antiox, or put in some N-acetylcysteine and some sulforaphanes so that you're supporting some of the detox pathways, which we want to do. But we don't want to interfere with chemotherapy or any drugs. So if a person's on oral chemotherapy, then we don't really want to be changing drug metabolism. So certainly we would want to include in our assessment a good toxic exposure history, and there is a form for that in the course, so you can take a look at it, because that's important. But sometimes we have to wait to actually detox a patient from heavy metals because they might be frail, or they may be in the middle of, you know, 10 months of oncology treatment. So you just have to be judicious about when is the right time and how aggressive you can be. Many cancer patients have compromised liver and kidney function, so you need good kidney function to do chelation. So I'm pretty conservative, basically, but you can put mild things in there, and you can sometimes get a sense by just doing a good toxic exposure history For example, I have a patient who grew up in Eastern Europe across from some industrial plant. And so I did an assessment on her thinking that she had toxic exposures, and indeed she did. So taking a good history can give you a sense. And when we do detox for chemotherapy, we're also activating a lot of the pathways that allow for the excretion of heavy metals. And some people sequester these metals and are unable to secrete them and end up storing them, and then they do their damage. So it's quite individual. And so that's my short answer to that. Then CC asks for clarification on the Warburg effect and the net mitochondrial energy production. So not to be disrespectful of this question, but I want to focus these calls on clinical mentoring. So I included in the notes for this call a chart showing the net ATP result of normal tissue that goes through oxidative phosphorylation, which yields 36 moles of ATP per molar of glucose, and in a cell that is undergoing hypoxia and goes through anaerobic glycolysis, you get a net 2. So you potentially can have a net of 38, but depends where the physiology is. But in a tumor cell, then you're having aerobic glycolysis, the Warburg effect, which gives you a net of 4 molars of ATP per mole of glucose. And I just basically gave you slides to look at so you can see how that all happens. And so I'm going to just leave it at that. In the notes, I put these slides and some links if you want to go back and study oxidative phosphorylation and glycolysis, because some people want to know that really deeply and other people are more interested in clinical things. So I will stop there. That concludes the questions that were submitted. Does anyone want to ask anything about that? Okay, so I want to bring to your attention some nice studies that I think are very interesting and support our work and our rationale. There is a study on managing the gastrointestinal side effects of irinotecan, and both irinotecan and topotecan produce incredibly severe diarrhea as an adverse effect because they're metabolized into a byproduct that is excreted in the bile into the intestines. And so this study shows how to use activated charcoal to absorb that, basically. And so this is a great protocol to do for patients if they're on those. So this study showed 1,000 milligrams of activated charcoal with, at least 8 ounces of water given the evening before the infusion and then for 3 days afterwards. 2 or 3 days afterwards, and that kind of absorbs the that toxic byproduct, that metabolite. And so I've done this with patients a lot, but here's a great study on it. So that's a good tip, helping patients get through chemo with those agents. I have another paper here titled Effects of Acupuncture on Cancer-Related Cognitive Impairment in Chinese Gynecologic Cancer Patients, a Pilot Cohort Study. And it's a 2018 study. And I'm very interested in cancer-related cognitive impairment. And so this study showed that not only did function improve, but there was less loss of white matter. There was less change in the structure and function of the hippocampus. So that's pretty significant. This is a human study. So that's 2018. Another paper I put in here titled Mareva Enhances Gemcitabine's Effectiveness Against Advanced Pancreatic Cancer. So this is an example of a botanical not interfering with a chemotherapy agent, but actually being synergistic with it. Mareva is a brand name for a raw material of curcumin that's used in manufacturing. And I think that is Invena, which is a supplier of raw materials that's based in Italy. And they're one of the top suppliers of curcumin. They call their product Mareva. And Thorne has a product called Mareva, but this is actually the the substrate that's in a lot of products. So if you're reading the label of a curcumin product, you can see if they're using this raw material, which is super high quality. But this study showed that the curcumin activated the NRF2 pathway, which ended up being very cytoprotective and activating an antioxidant response that was protective to the patients, decreasing their adverse effects, but not interfering with the function of the gemcitabine. The drug name for that is Gemzar, and this is in a category of chemotherapy agents that are pyrimidine anti-metabolites. And so what that means is that this interferes with the ability for the cell to go through DNA synthesis. And so it's a pretty powerful chemotherapy agent. It's coming into more use over time. This study also, I just want to point out, this study extended overall survival for over 10 months, and that was comparable to the two chemotherapy regimen, but there were more adverse effects because there were two chemo agents, but the outcome was the same. The study achieved a 61.3% disease control rate. And so that's pretty impressive in pancreatic cancer. And we're going to talk about a pancreatic cancer case. So we want to look for where there's synergisms as well as interactions. And then there's another acupuncture study. This is a 2018 study, the efficacy of acupuncture for chemotherapy-related All right, so those are the studies. If anyone wants to ask about any of that, you can let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to jump to this amazing case that was submitted by Dr. Stacy DeAndre. And I actually don't know if Stacy's on the call, but she'll get to hear the recording. So Stacy is a medical doctor in Northern California, and she is working on creating an integrative cancer center at one of the hospitals or medical centers where she works. So very inspiring. And this is her case. So this is a case of recurrent pancreatic cancer, and you should have all received a link to download it so we can look at it together. Initially, this was a T2N2 high-grade adenocarcinoma. So T2 means it was somewhere between 2 and 5 centimeters in mass. And that's what the T stands for. And that's, you know, anything that's 2 centimeters or above, that's a significant tumor. You wouldn't think so, maybe, but there's billions of cells in the head of a pin, a 3 millimeter size mass. So that's a lot of tumor cells in a 2 centimeter plus mass. And then the N2 means there were two nodes that were invaded that were identified. High grade means that the cells are dividing quickly. So this person is 51 and had a recurrence, and she is described as thin. So pancreatic cancer patients develop sarcopenia and cachexia early on. And if you think about the pancreas, it's a metabolic organ. So digestion is affected, energy production and utilization is affected. So it has both its exocrine and endocrine functions, meaning that it produces digestive enzymes, but it also regulates our metabolism through insulin. So the impact is generally early on. Not all cancers develop cachexia and sarcopenia early on, but I'm very watchful for that. Pancreatic cancer can just run like wildfire. And so if you see a pancreatic cancer patient who's thin, you need to just jump on calories and nutrients for them, because often they don't feel like eating. They're often really nauseous because their pancreas is swollen and it might be pressing on their stomach or on their gallbladder or their liver. This patient had a Whipple procedure, which is the removal of a good portion of the pancreas and the upper digestive tract. So one of the goals with a patient like this is to try and help her get nutrients in a form that she can absorb them. And so sometimes Whipple procedure patients just don't have good digestion and absorption because a portion of their digestive tract was removed. So you have to be thinking about nutrients and calories in these patients for a variety of reasons. And so this patient's recurrence thus far is local, and that's not uncommon. Quite often the pancreas just recurs locally and doesn't spread all over the body. If it does spread, it first goes through the abdominal cavity, and then you're at risk for an obstruction. So you have to watch these patients closely because they do get obstructed. So the goal of this patient is quality of life and length of life. And so, you know, this doesn't say cure, it doesn't say palliation, but this is a palliative treatment where we understand right now we probably won't cure the pancreatic cancer because we're not very good at solving pancreatic cancer, but we can certainly enhance the quality of life and the length of life. And if you think of Steve Jobs, who lived, I think, 15 years or 11 years post pancreatic cancer, that's unusual. Most people are dead in 6 months after their diagnosis. So we have the potential to be able to extend the life and the quality of life of these patients. So let's look at how this unfolded, a little more of the history, and then all the things I think about when I have a complex patient with an aggressive cancer that conventional oncology doesn't really do much for. So this patient put herself on melatonin at 5 milligrams at bedtime. You'll see later in the history she was having trouble with sleep, so I don't know if that's why she prescribed it, but we know that higher doses of melatonin are useful in many cancers. The patient put herself on curcumin. We don't know the dose, and the patient put herself on a probiotic. So we'll look at what she should be doing. The patient's medical history is significant for autoimmune thyroid disease. So there's already a ground of inflammation and of autoimmunity, which can also impact the pancreas. Some diabetes is autoimmune type 1. The family history is also significant for autoimmune disease. So then we know that the patients can be more inflamed than a patient without this history. And so we want to emphasize more inflammation control in the patient with this kind of history. She has a supportive husband and family and church community, does yoga, good control of stress. So good. We can ask her to do a lot of things and she'll probably be able to be highly compliant. So in the labs that were provided for this case, her hemoglobin A1C was high. I actually did not type that in. So we'll have to look back at the number. I think it was 5.8 or 6.0. It was quite high. So you see this a lot in pancreatic cancer patients because their glycemic control is really disrupted because the function of the pancreas is disrupted. And of course, having high glucose and high insulinemia is signaling growth. So this creates this tumor microenvironment of a lot of stimulation of growth. So I often put berberine in there. And of course, we want to put this patient on a low glycemic paleo keto diet, but that is adequate in calories. So a lot of times people take the carbs out and they're not ramping up their fats. And so they lose weight because they're not getting enough calories. So patients need counseling on that. The vitamin D is not optimized. It's only 31. So I like to get people between 55 and 80. Around 75 is my goal. Homocysteine is low. And I'm going to speak to that in a moment because, Stacey, that was one of her core questions. Like, what about that? What about low homocysteine? What does that mean? So I will go over that with you momentarily. Mild iron deficiency. We don't know if that was from surgery or poor absorption of nutrients. But we would want to make sure that she had a healthy amount of iron. We don't want high iron in patients because iron is sequestered by tumor cells, but we don't want them to be outside of low normal. So somewhere in the first quartile of normal, you want to monitor that, make sure she's repleted and not deficient. Her stool cultures were negative for C. diff, and this was tested because this patient was complaining of diarrhea as an adverse effect. So I'll show you that momentarily also. I looked at her labs and noted that the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio is less than 3. So that's a pretty good prognosis. So it means we could expect to help her to have a better quality of life and maybe slow down the progression of her disease. We do have a clinical pearl on the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio. So if you want to learn about that, you can listen to that. She doesn't appear to have hypercoagulation, which is actually very common in active pancreatic cancer. So I always watch that. And she didn't have elevated copper or ceruloplasmin, but her zinc to copper ratio wasn't good. I liked it to be 1:1. So I would replete her with zinc. Now, here's the two core questions that Stacy asked. What's the meaning of such a low homocysteine and what can we do to balance that? And then her next question is, what are some of the anti-cancer foods and nutraceuticals? So we're going to look at what Stacy put together, and then we'll look at how I would embellish that and add to it. So when you have low homocysteine, it means you have a poor ability to methylate and quench oxidative stress, both, and that you have altered sulfur metabolism. And so Joseph Pizzorno recommends using N-acetylcysteine at 2 to 3 grams a day, which is a lot of N-acetylcysteine and a lot of sulfur. The other sulfur-containing nutrients that can be considered are taurine and glutathione, and Quicksilver, which is Chris Shade's company and Designs for Health, make a nice liposomal glutathione that you can have the patient just hold under their tongue, and it doesn't taste terrible. A lot of glutathione tastes terrible. And so that's a nice way to improve glutathione and help quench some oxidative stress, which is already elevated in cancer patients. And so when a patient can't sulfate, then they are going to have trouble with detoxification as well, like of mercury is an example. And when, and some patients have a genetic SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, that make their glutathione production inefficient. And so they have more oxidative stress there. Therefore, they potentially have more damage to their DNA and their mitochondria. So these form patterns. And I've given you in the notes for this call, not on the case study pages, but in the notes for the call, I put two infographics that show the pathways involved, what is compromised in low homocysteine, and some references from both Ben Lynch, who's the one of the experts in methylation, and an article called Homocysteine Friend or Foe by Joe Pizzorno. So those are actually in the notes for this call if you want to actually take a look at these pathways and where the compromise happens. So think poor detoxification, poor sulfation, and more oxidative stress, and utilizing some sulfur-rich foods and sulfur-rich nutrients. All right, so now the patient is suffering from a lot of adverse effects, so we always want to address those because that's about quality of life. It can also be about the ability to get adequate nutrients and eat and digest. So this patient, as part of her main complaint, is having persistent diarrhea. And remember, chemotherapy and surgery of this kind of patient would lead to a very disrupted microbiome. And so we want to address that. But also remember this wonderful formula that we did a clinical pearl on called Huang Qin Tang. And I would give this in a high dose to someone with just persistent diarrhea, 3 to 6 grams a day in divided doses. And there are the herbs in there. And there's a very detailed discussion of this in one of our clinical pearls. And then I always do acupuncture and moxibustion on these patients to accelerate the resolution. And then, of course, we need to tend to the microbiome and then think about using glutamine to heal the lining and allow the cells of the digestive tract to repair and have a better barrier there so we don't have leaky gut on top of everything else. So that's where I start. And those of you who've listened to that clinical pearl know that I love that formula. It's a many hundreds of year old formula and it's quite safe. All right. Then this patient is complaining of fatigue. Now, we don't know if that's because she's losing electrolytes and fluids or she can't eat and not absorbing nutrients. We don't really know. We do know that she has high levels of inflammation potentially, and that is the primary cause of persistent fatigue. And so I think about giving adaptogenic herbs. I'll give you a few examples here. Adrenatone is a nice adaptogenic formula from Designs for Health. Nature Health Products makes a very nice formula called Power Adapt. Really nice botanical formulas for nourishing the resilience to stress, adaptation to stress. And think about things like astragalus, Panax ginseng, rhodiola, ashwagandha, ganoderma, these types of formulas where we're using things that are also multitaskers that have anti-tumor or anti-inflammatory effects as well. And then I also always use acupuncture and moxibustion for fatigue. And then remember, we have to address inflammation when we have a fatigued patient as well. She was also complaining of insomnia. We don't know if that's because she has pain, if that's because she's in menopause. We don't really know if it's because she gets up to has diarrhea all night long. So when a person has insomnia or fatigue, you have to do a differential diagnosis and try to understand the root cause. And since we don't know that, I always start with magnesium and make sure the patient's body stores of magnesium are repleted. I like to use glycinate form for this function. And I'll spread it out during the day in a person who has diarrhea, because if you take too much magnesium all at once, you can loosen your stool, and then have her take some at bedtime also. A patient like this might do well to have L-theanine, which is increases GABA if anxiety is part of her insomnia. Honokale is a lovely, lovely sedative, but it can give you diarrhea. So I give it in a low dose, so only 2 caps, and I do that with some food. And remember, we use Honokale also to lower BCL2 and promote apoptosis. And it's one of our big tools in tumor control. And acupuncture is fabulous also. And then if it's hormonal, we have to think about that. So the next section is, what about menopausal symptoms? And Stacy had put in her notes that she wanted to consider hormone replacement therapy with bioidenticals, but pancreatic cancer can have estrogen receptors. So you would want to go back to the pathology report and see if that was looked at. And if it wasn't, you could request to find out if this patient has estrogen receptor positive pancreatic cancer, because if she does, we can use a lot more treatments. And so I'm really careful about using hormone replacement therapy until I know if the tumor cell line does have estrogen receptors. A lot of tumors do. So remember, estrogen is a proliferative hormone. Some brain cancers, some lung cancers, some colon cancers have estrogen receptors. So you really have to check before you add estrogen to a protocol. So if we don't know that, then we want to use other tools. So then I think about acupuncture for patients to help them balance their system with menopausal changes. And also in Chinese medicine, we use yin tonics, which are calming and nourishing and moistening, but they're not estrogenic, the list I gave you. So you wouldn't use Dong Quai, for example, because it does influence estrogen. So these are nice botanicals that are very calming and moistening and balancing for menopausal symptoms. These are traditional formulas that use these. So those were her main complaints. So now I'm going to go through the interventions that I would either modify Stacy's or focus upon. So this first list is, what am I going to focus on? And so in pancreatic patients, I focus on opposing sarcopenia, cachexia, making sure they're getting adequate nutrients and calories. And Stacy had put in her notes that she wanted to balance the microbiome and correct the digestion before she started with a more complete protocol. But you don't have time in pancreatic cancer patients to do that. Correcting the microbiome takes months, and she could be dead in a few months. So I just jump on the nutrients, see what she can tolerate in her digestive tract, and do it all at once in a pancreatic cancer patient, because we just don't have time. So it's that aggressive a cancer in many, many patients. So that's my input on that idea. But we need calories. We need to give calories to these patients, and we want the diet to be building muscle and anti-inflammatory. So I always put a shake or two in the protocol. And sometimes these patients are nauseous, as I said, so they could just sip on it all day long or put extra ginger in it. for the nausea, or mint. And then remember, we had to replete her vitamin D. So we would, I'd go up probably to 10,000, and then watch her blood about every 2 or 3 months. She was at 31, so it's going to take a while to get to 75. And then we were going to monitor her iron in the labs that were submitted. Her iron was quite low. And so I would give Ferroquel, which is a highly absorbable Designs for Health iron. It's a bisglycinate, and it doesn't constipate, which we might want in a patient with diarrhea, but I don't like to irritate the gut with iron. So it's a nice product. There are a Thorn makes a nice iron product, so does Pure Encapsulation, so does Integrative Therapeutics. Now, remember, she had a high hemoglobin A1C, so putting her on a modified keto-paleo diet will stabilize that. And then we could also use berberine at 3 grams a day in divided doses. And also, Panax ginseng is really great for stabilizing glycemic control, improving it, and insulin sensitivity. And both of those things have anti-tumor activity. Berberine also is really good for pathogenic bacteria in the gut. So that's nice considering we have microbiome issues. And ginseng is very supportive of digestive function. So we want to always be looking for multitaskers. Now, Whipple patients have really a poor pancreatic enzyme and bile secretion. And so this patient is on Questran, a lot of which is an emulsifier of fats, because the bile isn't always there. And this patient, I believe, is also on Creon, which is a prescription lipase. And so I always put these patients on digestive herbs and always put them on a really good pancreatic enzyme and ox bile formula. And then if I'm giving them a lot of fat, like I like to make the shake have a lot of fat in it, to put calories in there. And so then you have to give lipase with that. And some patients, you have to give them prescription lipase, which is what Creon is. But we got to get those calories into these patients. And so I really, really focus on that. And some of these patients, they just mostly have shakes and some vegetables or soups. And most of them can tolerate eating some proteins. But sometimes the shake is all they can tolerate in the beginning. So we try to really ramp up the calories and the nutrients. We already talked about the microbiome, and then we also emphasized the need for good inflammation control in this patient. And so omega-3 fatty acids, at least 3 or 4 grams a day. If she really has cachexia starting, then I sometimes go up to 6 grams a day, but not on the first day or week. You know, have to ramp it up. But sometimes that really dials down inflammation. A lot of people with autoimmune disease really get some good control when their omega-3s are increased. And also vitamin D is very useful for autoimmune inflammation. So by repleting that in this patient, we might also have a good impact on any autoimmune inflammation that's happening. I would put curcumavail in. It's my favorite Designs for Health curcuminoid product. And I'd go up to 4 grams a day, and both for tumor control as well as inflammation control. Although some people get diarrhea from curcumin at that level, so I'd start low and stair step it in. And always use Boswellia with the added alpha-keto boswellic acids in it, because it's so good for inflammation in the gut. And it also has anti-tumor activity. It down-regulates a lot of the cytokines, especially LOX5, lipoxygenase 5, which some of the herbs don't. So that is, you know, my focus: calories, glycemic control, digestion, microbiome, inflammation. And then I always like to put adaptogenic and chi tonifying herbs. And we talked about those in Adrenatone and Natura's Power Adapt. So we already talked about that. And then I'm going to look at what can we do to also put something cytotoxic in here and focus more on the micro and tumor microenvironment. So we'll go through all of the things I think about putting in a formula. Now, Stacy had increased the melatonin dose to 10, which I concur with. The patient tolerates 20, then I give 20. The main side effect for high melatonin is vivid dreams. And so some patients don't mind that. Some people never get it. And some people really feel disturbed by it. So I always start at 10 and then see if they tolerate 20. That's where all the research on melatonin has been done. We already talked about omega-3 fatty acids. Stacy put 2 grams. I would ramp that up because I do think this patient's probably sarcopenic and probably in the early stages of cachexia. She uses VSL-3, which is a popular probiotic. I really think that the Claire probiotics are some of the really highest quality right now. I like their Therabiotic Complete, which is very broad spectrum. And they have this new product, Target GBX, which has a different mix of organisms and also is very good for mood and neurotransmitters. And you know, these patients are really stressed. So I always want to make sure we're supporting their resilience factors and their mood because it's, you know, they're so challenged. And there's no multi in this protocol. And so I like to use a basic multi that doesn't have copper or iron just to make sure we get those methylated B vitamins and some of the micronutrients so that we have an insurance policy for that because a lot of pancreatic cancer patients just can't eat very much. So I like to at least put that in. So I either use the Designs for Health Twice Daily Multi or the Integrative Therapeutics Pro Thriver Wellness Multi, which was designed by Dr. Elise Alshur. It's a great formula too. And then Stacy also wanted to use THC for sleep. And so if the patient tolerates that and likes that, then of course you get a little anti-tumor activity. But also I think we should think about the other things I listed in the insomnia paragraph above, like magnesium and theanine and acupuncture and the yin tonifying herbs. That all is very helpful for sleep. And then I also really talk to patients about sleep hygiene and helping them move to the parasympathetic dominant side of their nervous system so that they are ready for sleep. So I make sure they're not exposed to a lot of blue light and use not sitting in front of a screen in the evening when they're not supposed to be getting blue light, which is the light of morning. So those patients who are kind of technology addicts can use yellow lenses. You can buy yellow lenses online, and some of the newer computers actually make the screen go yellow if you program that into them. They have that option so that when it starts to get dark, you're not looking at blue light, which keeps you awake because your brain thinks it's daytime. Now, Stacy had put in HRT for the menopausal symptoms, and we've discussed the caution about that to make sure that these tumor cells don't have estrogen receptors. And then also Stacy had put wanting to add glutamine and colostrum for the gut repair, and we already talked about that. Definitely glutamine. I don't have any objection to colostrum. It definitely is helpful if the microbiome is really wiped out, which is possible with this much diarrhea. So we could add that. So now let's look at really targeted supplements. So first I look at all the functions we really need to address. We just did that. Then I look at the foundation nutrition. Then I look at what we need to target. So our next step is looking at kind of our bigger levers. And so these were things that Stacy had recommended, EGCG, curcumin, quercetin, and bromelain, and also resveratrol. So remember that Designs for Health makes a resveratrol supreme product that has both quercetin and resveratrol in it. And quercetin's pretty hard to absorb. So if you have it with an enzyme like bromelain, you get better absorption. And Soren makes a product called Quercinase. Douglas Labs makes a product that's a combination of quercetin and bromelain. So those are good things to think about. Remember, quercetin also has a lot of anti-tumor activity. It also inhibits BCL2, which we just talked about. And then Nick Gonzalez was a very well-known integrative oncologist who has passed away several years ago, but he was really big on using Wovenzyme and high levels of proteases in many patients, but particularly in pancreatic cancer patients. So we could consider that, but it's a lot of pills, and we're already asking patients to take a lot of pills and have to take the proteases on an empty stomach to get this effect. So it depends on the patient, how overwhelmed they are by their pills, and if they're a kind of an organized person and could find time during the day to take their, some of their supplements with food and some of their supplements on an empty stomach. So kind of depends who it is, what we can ask them to do. But that is a very common prescription in many naturopathic protocols for pancreatic cancer, to use these high amounts of proteases. Then I always use modified citrus pectin to inhibit angiogenesis and metastasis. Now, we still have only local recurrence, but we would like to keep that so. Please allow me to go a little bit over on this call so we can get through this case. And then I also use super artemisinin by Allergy Research Group. It's a higher milligram product. And artemisinin can be cytotoxic, but cells can become resistant. So I'll do it every other week. So if you want to use this as a cytotoxic therapy, 2 capsules 3 times a day for 7 days on, 7 days off, that's an option. And then I wanted to show you things that are known to be specific to pancreatic cancer. You might be interested in looking up Anvirzel, which is also called Nerium. It's made from oleander, and it primarily affects the PI3K/AKT/mTOR pathway. Keith Block, a very well-known integrative oncologist, has been doing research on this for a long time, and now MD Anderson and Cleveland Clinic are looking at it, and it is used concurrently with other therapies. And it is available for patients to order themselves. We can't order it and dispense it to the patient, but the patient can order it. And if you want to know more about it, you can look it up online and to also talk to Liz. She's really fantastic. Liz Gutierrez, I gave you her phone number, and she's happy to talk to anybody about this and also help patients get it. And so that's a consideration in treatment-resistant solid tumors. Remember, we wanted to replete the zinc. Tocotrienols have a number of studies showing their impact on pancreatic cancer, but one of my favorites is Nigella sativa seed oil. This is black cumin seed because it's very high in thymoquinones, and thymoquinones are known to be effective for the pancreatic cancer inhibition. So I always include that, about 2 teaspoons a day. Sometimes I'll have people mix it with olive oil and just put it on vegetables because it does have this cumin-y kind of taste. Some people put it in their shakes. Some people just take it by the tablespoon. Always use hinokiol in pancreatic cancer. And then the following Chinese anti-tumor herbs, Scutellaria bicalensis, Salvia miltiariza, Oldenlandia, and also German chamomile, Machicaria chamomilia, is very high in epigenin. There are a lot of studies showing that epigenin has an impact on pancreatic cancer cell lines. And remember, the foods celery and parsley are high in epigenin. And then always 2 formulas. When I make a formula, I'll add digestive herbs with pancreatic cancer patients. So we might think of putting ginger and tangerine peel in because not only are they digestives, but they also have anti-tumor activity. If you couldn't do something like that, you could look at a traditional Chinese formula that's available already made called Pinellia Magnolia formula and give that in a high dose, like 3 to 6 grams a day. You can get that in granules or capsules. And that's a formula for relieving obstructions in the abdomen and so, or in Chinese terminology, in the middle jiao and the middle burner. And so that's a great formula. And so you can take a look at that. And then I really, really focus on the shake in these patients as a strategy to get more into them. So I want them to be high calorie. And so I'll add also medium chain triglycerides because they get immediate energy. You don't need to digest that or process that to utilize, get some energy. And then I'll put extra fats in, but you do have to digest those, and you might need the lipase or the creon for that. And then I'll put the medicinal mushrooms in the shake in, you know, 1 or 2 scoops. And then I'll always add the carnitine tartrate because we want to maintain muscle mass and protect the mitochondrial function. And I'll go up to 2 grams in a patient like this. So the shake is core for a patient like this. And then Stacy put in all these beautiful dietary and lifestyle guidelines, which of course we want to include and help the patient cope, make sure they can sleep, make sure that they tend to their spirit and their heart. And then I listed here also some of the blood tests that I would order. And Stacy also put in, she was ordering Ubiome. And you know, you can use whatever lab you want to look at the microbiome. I usually use GIFX by Genova. So that gives you the aerobic and anaerobic organisms because they do a DNA probe. And then I would look at the methylation SNPs in this patient, and you could have the patient order a 23andMe kit, get their whole genome and file, and then run it through the Genetic Genie site, which is a free analytic engine that'll show you all their methylation pathways as well as their detoxification pathways. And that might enlighten us to why the homocysteine is low in this patient. And then I always think about what else could we do in the naturopathic oncology sector, even though I can't do these because my license is restricted, but I partner with other clinicians who do these therapies. So remember the high dose proteolytic enzymes. I consider doing IV vitamin C in these patients, IV lipoic acid, IV NAD, IV phosphatidylcholine, and IV or subcutaneous mistletoe. Those are all things to be considered. And then I would look at even more cytotoxic therapies because we want to put an aggressive plan together. But the herbs listed here are very toxic. So if you don't have any training in using them, then, you know, have a mentor and be safe. And so I've listed the Natura Health Products Phytocyto. It's a great, also every other week. So sometimes I'll do a cytotoxic cycle where they're doing artemisinin in 1 week and phytocyto the next week, and then they could be doing IV vitamin C at the same time. And so that is stressful to the cells and maybe being more strict, putting themselves into ketosis, and so getting a good cell kill for that, or at least put the brakes on. And then there is the off-label use of prescription drugs. Low-dose naltrexone might be beneficial in such an aggressive type of a cancer. COX-2 inhibitors might be considered, although we can do that with herbs. But these are an example of off-label use of prescription drugs. And then over-the-counter cimetidine is used quite a lot by some integrative oncologists to also slow down proliferation. And so those are things you can inquire into, or we'll do clinical pearls on them. And then in conventional oncology, a patient like this, you have to just try and individualize it as much as possible, because this is such a challenging cancer. So if we can get fresh tissue, then we can look at the cells either through Larry Wiesenthal's lab or Robert Nagurny's lab, Rational Therapeutics, where they look at chemosensitivity and now also monoclonal antibody sensitivity, at anti-racing kinase inhibitor sensitivity, see what might work. And then remember that pancreatic cancer is often expressing estrogen receptors, EGFR receptors, the RAS gene. Foundation One is also a good lab that you can ask an oncologist to run analysis on frozen tumor cells, also Caris Life Sciences. So my point here is, try to figure out what will work on this patient by looking at chemosensitivity and also at the receptors and the gene expression of the tumor cell, and might find something that works, or look for herbs that enter into those pathways. And then I've also put here a very famous medical doctor in Portugal who takes on really advanced cases and does a lot of work with pancreatic patients, does hyperthermia concurrent with chemotherapy and some other high-dose enzyme therapies and IV therapies. And so some of my patients go to Europe and get therapies that cannot be done here. And that is the end of this very interesting case. I'm very sorry that I went over, but let's take some time for questions if you would like to ask questions. And then we'll conclude.
Hi, this is Stacy.
Stacy, oh good.
It is. I'm here.
Well,
I was muted. So wow, thank you. That was a lot of info. Complicated, really, really complicated.
Yeah.
So a little update on her. So we did add the shake and the MCT and glutamine to her regimen and some of the other things that you talked about. So she was doing a little better in terms of her gut, sleeping better with more melatonin, kind of tried to get her diet a little bit better. Unfortunately, she did have a follow-up PET scan and has now some peritoneal, recurrence.
Yeah, that happens,
So, you know, I think hitting some of the treatment now is, you know, now more important even than it was before.
Yeah.
So we can get her on those type of things. So I'm going to order, I already have foundation pending just to see. She doesn't want chemotherapy, but she'll consider maybe some targeted therapy. So we'll see what shakes out of her.
And also testing. They're doing, you know, CAR T cell therapy with pancreatic cancer now in studies. But you have to prove that you're treatment resistant first.
And that's rough too.
It's really rough. And some people die from
that.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'd try a lot of things before that.
Yes. So no, great plan.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking to see if you could find something that would work from conventional oncology, look at some of these naturopathic oncology interventions that could be used concurrently, and then you can cycle cytotoxic herbs and then, you know, replete her in all these other ways and go after the tumor microenvironment. And so, you know, find out what she needs most, where, you know, some things like the D and the hemoglobin A1C. And I think you'll find interesting Dr. Pizzorno's and Van Lynch's articles on low homocysteine as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. And her fatty acids, I did check those, and they were low. She was low on alpha-linolenic acid. And trying to add it in is tough, though, because she does have some oily diarrhea despite being on lipase and creon. And so, I mean, we'll push the dose, but it's still...
Well,
maybe
little sips, you know, like little amounts with a lipase. Integrative Therapeutics also makes a low-dose lipase. So she had little amounts of it, like she sipped on it a little and took a lipase every time she had a quarter or a half a cup.
Spread it out.
She might be able to
tolerate
it. Yeah. Get some nutrients and calories in.
Cool. Very good.
Okay. Good. Anything else? Okay. Anybody else want to comment or ask a question? Okay. So I think this was a great content-rich call. I hope it gives you things to think about with your patients and also to understand why things are in these protocols, what the rationale is, and I look forward to being with all of you again in a month. Thank you, everyone. Good night.